Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable panel for this morning. It's Tuesday, Wednesday, the 31st of August. Thank you very much.
Everyone needs an editor.
Yes, they do. And thank you for being mine this morning.
Of course.
Each day we start off with our roundtable panel. We do so this morning. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Hi. I stayed up too late rehearsing with the Berkshire Ramblers yesterday for the great.
What are the rehearsals like?
They're interesting. Roselle buys a lot of pizza, and I like a fool eat it. And then, you know, the next morning I look at the scale, and it's not good.
It's horrible when that happens.
But the point really is that the Berkshire Ramblers will be this weekend. on Saturday. Get your tickets now before they're all gone at Arlo's Church. It's not that big a place. Arlo's Bring Your Own God Church. And it's a benefit for the benefit for the Guthrie Center.
413-528-1955. Rosemary Armeo is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany. Who will you be playing with on Saturday night?
Oh, the family. Labor Day reunions.
Oh, lovely. Fun. Sounds fun.
Yeah.
Well, good. Very nice to have you here. Libby Post joins us. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning.
How are you? Political consultant and with us. All right. So the original story that I sent out last night before just about 15 minutes before it broke, but was that we were going to talk about the big immigration speech that Donald Trump was going to give tonight. And then there were the quick murmurings that Donald Trump would be visiting Mexico, and then it became confirmed. So Donald Trump will visit Mexico today for a private meeting with President Enrique Peña Nieto, a trip that will make him take him to a nation that he has repeatedly scorned before quickly flying back for what is billed as a major immigration speech in Arizona. The president of Mexico's office said Tuesday night that the meeting would take place at the presidential palace in Mexico City, and Mr. Trump on Twitter said he looked very much forward to the visit.
So let's start by saying, as Christine Lavin, the great folk singer, has written so many times, what could this guy Nieto have been thinking? Look, you know, his polls are way down. He's not popular. And yet he meets with a guy who has trashed his country, trashed his people, talked about setting up a wall, called them rapists and everything else. What could he be thinking? What is it that in his mind he thinks he gains from this?
The move was promoted by Steve Bannon, his new CEO, and he thinks it will help Trump look statesmanlike. He thinks that it's a bold move, unexpected, that undercuts Hillary Clinton. And I can't wait for the theater of the whole thing, to tell you the truth. It's going to be a private meeting, but you know Trump has no private meetings.
And he's going to call Peña Nieto my Mexican. That's what he's going to do.
I love the Mexicans.
Right,
even
I love the
rapists.
The Mexicans. Yeah, right. I love their wall, and this is my Mexican.
It may work. It's not a lot, but Trump is doing a little bit better in the polls now. And every time he gives some reassurance to people that he is not the nut that a lot of people claim he is, every time he gives that reassurance, polls go up a little bit because some of the people who have been so alienated and said they can't vote for him under any circumstance take some solace out of the whole thing and say, okay, now I can vote for him. And whether Libby and Rosemary, whether you guys, who I know are, you know, fiercely committed in this election.
As are you, my dear.
That sounds bad. We're just going to vote for her, and we like
her.
That's all.
And you're going to vote for her, too.
I haven't hit anybody. I haven't bitten them. Not fierce. I do disagree with you, though, a little, Alan. I don't see how the president of Mexico gains from this. He is bringing
I said that. This is what I just said.
Let me go on. I don't think it will benefit Trump, either. Yeah. I don't see how he comes ahead on this. If he does indeed give a speech that is ameliorative, that is friendly towards the Mexican, then he upsets his base, which is already pretty upset about his softening. If he goes to see the Mexican president and then comes back to the United States and he's the same old Trump hard as can be, doesn't he look like a hypocrite?
Well, it depends. I mean, the only thing that matters in this whole thing is whether he's convincing anybody. And as I just got through saying, I do believe that he is. I mean, he was at 10% 3 days ago chance of winning. Now he's up in a couple of percentage points. It's not a lot, but it is moving in his direction. And I think the reason it's moving in his direction is that the Bannons and the others are giving people an excuse to come back into his fold.
Except that this is a zero-sum game for him because of the anger from his base about him softening his views on immigration, and now he's going to go do a photo op with the president of Mexico, of all people. These people think that that's a horrible thing. And so he might gain some of the people who are like, oh, my God, he's crazy, but I don't want to vote for Hillary, and maybe I'll go back. But then he's going to lose people from his base.
I don't think they can afford – I think they'll
stay home.
They may stay home.
That's what they'll do.
But I'm not so sure. You know, I think that that the name of this game has always been in our presidential politics system is you run hard in a primary to the right and then you go to the middle. This is the traditional going to the middle, which up to now he has really not done well.
But this has been his main issue. I mean, this was his big issue. This was the thing that he said from the very beginning.
Okay, so what I'm going to say to the three of you now is let's see. Let's just see if it works. We'll see it in the polls. We'll see it reflected in whether people are giving him that second chance that so many of them want to give him but feel that they can't. That's what I'll say.
So two things. One is that President Peña in Mexico is also very unliked in his country.
Correct.
His popularity is somewhere in the mid-20s.
Right.
Meanwhile, the former president of Mexico, Vicente Fox, this morning said he is not welcomed to Mexico by 130 million people. We don't like him. We don't want him. We reject his visit.
Yep.
Can't help.
Right. So I just...
Protests. It's going to be like Dick Nixon in South America. Right. I what
were they
thinking? He would get.
Well, the other thing too is that they're somewhere around the middle. I guess the original invitation came where they started to discuss the invitation on Sunday. Tuesday night, they were trying to put this in place, and many people were saying, "Well, we just don't have the security. We can't do this. This is a major visit. It's going to be difficult to do," and so all of this was rushed, extremely. And you just wonder how much it was thought through completely.
Yeah.
Especially before the speech, because then isn't that going to have an effect on the speech?
One would think.
If nothing else, just he's going to be exhausted. That's like he was in Seattle or someplace, and then he's got to fly to Mexico City and have a high-level meeting, a lot of pressure, and then he goes to Arizona. That's a lot of flight time aside from...
And so he's going from Mexico... to Arizona, where it's like this hotbed of anti-immigrant sentiment amongst those who are not already immigrants, right? You know, and I was reading that one of the stories last night. There's an anti-immigrant guy. His last name is Krikorian, right? I think is his last name. And I turned to Lynn. I said, "Gee, he had to have come from Armenia, or his parents had to have come from Armenia to be here. So he's an immigrant too."
Well, Libby, to be fair, we all are.
Right.
And there are some major groups who have practiced the art of the last one in, pull up the ladder.
Right, no kidding.
So, you know, it isn't as if that...
Alan. I just find it, you know, if his last name was Smith or Jones or something waspy, it would be one thing. But it's an Armenian last name, and I found it absolutely hysterical.
Well, I just want to reiterate that there are a lot of contemporary groups who have made it clear that they don't want anybody else in.
I get that. I understand
that. My favorite sport, speaking of hilarious, finding it hilarious, has been listening to the Trump, I'd say apologist, but I hate when I'm called a Hillary apologist. The surrogates, on cable television, talking about where is Donald Trump on immigration these days. Oh, it's not a softening. Well, he called it a softening. No, that's not what he meant. What he meant is it's like the discussion is divorced from reality. And this has added another whole layer to it. It's just so incredibly entertaining to watch.
Well, I was listening. I'm sorry. No, I was just listening to Mike Pence, the vice presidential nominee, coming in this morning, and he was saying, "Well, look, this is where is Hillary? What is she doing? Where is she?" But meanwhile, Donald Trump is in Mexico meeting with a world leader and to make America great again.
Ridiculous.
So that's the
Yeah, sure.
And then they started exactly as you as you indicated the questions of, well, you know, is he welcome? Do they want him? Is it? And he kept on saying, well, you know, I don't even know if anything is going to come out of this right away, but this is the beginning of a negotiation.
Right. He's a great deal maker.
Except that he can't negotiate on behalf of the United States until he's president.
Well, it is not, again, just to play the devil's advocate.
Yes, go right ahead.
Well, no, that's my job. I mean, that's all of our jobs, to sort of put our feet in the other people's shoes and see whether we can understand it. You know, they're going to, he's being seen as like the Goldwater kid picking the daisies. You know, this is going to be the end of it. And now he wants to reassure people that he will be a negotiator. Look, in this state, New York, Andrew Cuomo says he's for a Democratic Democratic Senate, but a lot of people know he's really not, because based on his record, he's really not. So you say one thing, you do another thing. You know, you guys are looking for absolute consistency here, which people will hold them accountable for.
Any consistency would be good.
Yeah, right. But they don't. People lie. They lie through their teeth.
The other thing that TV analysts are making a big deal about, and it's interesting, is what the heck is he doing as far as his campaign? Why was he in, for example, Washington last night, which has, they even voted for Dukakis. That is a Democratic state. He's not going to win.
Why are you in Seattle?
Or he was in Austin, Texas. What is he doing? And when is he going to practice for the debate? Does he not realize that for all of the faults that he points out, Crooked Hillary's a pretty good debater? Is he that egotistical that he's going
to
go in unprepared?
Yeah.
Or is he going to just drop the whole debate?
Well, no,
are we
going to
get
out
of it at the end?
I think Libby's got it.
I think he thinks he's going to do what he did in the Republican debates. He's going to insult everybody and just dominate the conversation and just dismiss Hillary, and it'll look so bad. It'll be worse than the Rick Lazio moment.
Joe, how would you like to moderate that debate?
I don't think anybody's going to win. I don't know who's moderating the first
debate.
They
haven't picked yet.
They haven't chosen?
No, they're still negotiating.
So it's in a month, a little less than a month. And I think it's going to be, because I know Trump had made a big deal as to who is going to be the moderators for all these events, but typically it's been Jim Lehrer said he'll never do another one again, so that you know, take him out of the mix. So it's been Judy Woodruff and Gwen Ifill and who else did it last, because usually it's Jim Lehrer for the last five election cycles has done all of them, I think. So it'll be interesting to see who they eventually choose. But I can't see it being anything else but just a, kind of a slugfest and not overly productive.
Well, slugfests have their risks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're right now, the number of women in this country who are for Hillary are overwhelmingly and against Trump for all the things that he said. So if, in fact, you get Trump casting aspersions on Hillary and insulting her the way that he did with others, he could find himself making a bad situation even worse.
Right. And his campaign manager, Kelly Conway, yesterday made the statement that if women were stronger, they wouldn't be raped. And
oh,
then Bannon, called everybody who went to a sister school a dyke. And so they're just doing their thing of insulting
everyone. They're probably
everyone.
Writing them off and saying,
they're
not going to win.
Right, but just
and so
insulting
we'll incite,
everyone.
We'll incite the women haters of this country.
I get the Bannon thing. I don't, you know, he's an idiot and fine. A woman talking about women need to be stronger so that they're not raped and putting the responsibility on the women instead of the responsibility on the men to not act like
Rapist.
Like rapist is just outrageous to me.
I didn't hear that. I must go back and look. But, you know, there's the possibility of Trump annoying women mightily, even if he tries to reunite. If you remember the debate with Carly Fiorina after he had said, would you vote for that face?
Right.
And then he's like, oh, she's a beautiful woman. Yeah. I just love Carly. I love all the women.
Yeah, she's got great legs.
even his nice is not working with women. And I love the new stuff about his modeling agency encouraging models to come in and
That's
lie
exactly
to the Customs Department and Customs people and to come in illegally.
There's going
to
be this commander-in-chief forum that they're going to be at separate but they'll be back-to-back. So that'll be sort of a precursor to
the debate.
To the debates. It'll be interesting to watch to see how well Trump can actually answer some of the questions when he's not in a debate setting, but just a one-on-one.
So. I want to remind you all, it's still 5% difference in the polling between the two.
Right, we get it, Alan. We know it's going to get tight.
What I don't think you get, I don't want to, argue it. But what I don't think you get is how dangerous 5% can be for the Democratic candidate. That's a lot of people in this country who, despite everything that you've said about Trump and everything he's done. 5% difference.
In some polls. Some polls are bigger. Some polls
are... Yeah, how much bigger? 6%? 7%?
Well, it was 10.
You know.
Okay. Let's assume you're right.
I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. It just means that we can't be complacent. That's all this means, is that we can't take this for granted.
No,
that we can't say that we're just going to win and we can stay
home. It means a lot more that when you have a candidate who talks about women and the blood coming from all over, and all the rest of this stuff, there's still, at least by your own admission, 40% of this country that is buying it.
I continue to be confused by schizophrenic coverage, and including even, Alan, from you, because you have talked here before about how all the down-ticket candidates are in trouble because Trump has done so badly, yet now we're arguing, the polls are so close. We're getting both. Either he's doing really miserably and is going to fail horribly, or it's so close and we don't know who's going to win.
By the way,
You
have never heard from me anything but that this is a close election. And because things can change on a dime, you have 3 months to go here, right?
Well, two.
Yes.
To 2 months?
September, October, and a week in November.
Okay, so a little less than 3 months. As I've said before, the British elections take a month, the whole thing. This whole thing can turn around based on something, maybe an Assange,
attack.
Attack or any of those things. So this is going to be, I have to assume, it's going to be a close election.
I agree with you. I've never said that it was going to be a runaway. I think the point that you're trying to make is... how can we as thinking people recognize that 40% of the country agree with this man?
Exactly.
And what does that say about us as a nation?
Or any other country back in history where the haters can really carry the day look at the consequences.
You know, there was an episode yesterday or the day before where a black man didn't open a door fast enough for a white woman at a McDonald's, and the white woman's husband or boyfriend took a gun out and shot the guy, killed him. You know, it is so easy, to kill black people in this country now.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back. We'll continue our conversation. We'll stop there.
Wow.
That's a good
place to stop.
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. We've been talking about Donald Trump and his visit to Mexico before his major immigration speech tonight in Phoenix. As a result, we have many letters, so we'll go to those right now.
Oh, yes. Jeff says, Alan, you wouldn't have to play devil's advocate if you brought back Chris or Rich. Invite Ray again. Balance. Well, fair is fair. I don't know that Chris is a conservative. In any way or form.
But he's a journalist first, and
Ray is very good. We love Ray to be here. And Rich Honan, of course, we were just talking about him in the break. He's been a great asset for the station. Let's see here. And Libby's immigration comment. To the panel, Libby posts on air suggestion this morning that because Mark Criconian Krikorian or any other American has ethnic-sounding surname, he or she should take a particular view on U.S. immigration policy is really quite offensive.
Okay. Sorry.
And Stewart says, I have a possible scenario. If Clinton wins, both popular and electoral college, Obama... you know, this guy, Stewart, he writes in this.
That's what I was saying before to avoid.
I'm sorry, Joe.
That's okay.
I should have listened to you as always. And I have to, and I have to tell you, everybody, don't be writing us letters with all these little, you know, four instead of four. You know, just write a letter. Okay, and Michael says, it's not close, Alan. It's going to be a landslide. Don't worry. We're going to make the pledge goal. Michael. As in the pledge, the WNC pledge.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. You've had letters like that before.
Yeah, and
don't call doom down on us.
And to Barbara writes to Joe, your interview with Gene Wilder was just wonderful. Listen last night. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much.
That's nice. And Carol, our wonderful nurse, Carol Lapani, I'm hoping that as Trump tries to backpedaling on his various issues to gain a point here or there, he will come across. To his base is just like all the others who find it necessary when one is in politics. He may not be as different as they want him to be. Love you all. Love the show. And we love her. Brendan says, the only way I could see a benefit for either Trump or Pena is to stage a fight, increasing their respective popularity with their bases. We should keep an eye on what Vince McMahon is doing Wednesday.
Ah, the macho factor.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. John says, I hope the Mexican president gives Trump a polite yet frosty reception, as in Antarctic winter level frosty. Meanwhile, the former president of Mexico can play bad cop and rip Trump a new one in Mexico's media. Ted, who's not a big fan of mine, writes, you may see, Alan, good morning. You say more often that it is possible for Trump to win the presidential election than it is possible for Hillary Clinton to win. He's got a board up there. He's going, one and one, Hillary to win. I know you will disagree, but your sadness, in quotes, that Bernie Sanders did not win the Democratic nomination continues to show. Second place continues to be held up as more significant than winning. And don't forget to reminder, that's what it says, reminder everyone, and I voted for Bernie. So the fact is, let me just set you straight. I voted for Bernie. I thought he did very well. I thought he brought the conscience of the party where it should be. But I have said it before. I'll say it again. I'm going to vote for Hillary. And I think that Hillary will win. But I do think that it is possible for her to lose. Anybody thinks otherwise is just not right. James says, I think anybody in the middle who was scared off from Trump wants an excuse to go back to him. Exactly. That's Alan. The trip to Mexico will give those scared off by the con episode some cover to vote for him. People understand the run to the middle strategy better than we think and accept it more than we like. And that's James from Ulster County.
I think that's true. I think the far right people who support him realize that he's doing this just for show and that he's really with them. So I think that is actually pretty astute. And I also think it's why the black vote is not going to go to him just because he gets up in a place, Detroit, by the way. He's going to Mexico before he goes to Detroit and says, your life stinks. Vote. What do you got to lose? Horrible.
Maybe the drug cartels will be at this meeting.
right.
Someone will take.
You know,
by the
actually,
way,
that raises security.
By the way, based on everything we read, maybe they will be.
Yeah,
that,
right. And maybe
wishing for that.
No, but maybe they'll be. You know.
No, but we don't know which politicians have which connections.
That's right.
Yeah, it made me wonder that perhaps he put his own people in to set up security that fast. Mexico is not an easy place for American politicians.
Mexico City
to travel
is very difficult.
Well, no, Mexico City's not really as bad as the provinces, but it's still dangerous enough that.
Oh, it's pretty
did
dangerous.
He say, I'll just bring my own people? Is that how he cut through all the red tape of it?
I can't imagine Secret Service would let him do that.
Also,
Secret Service isn't that great either. Obama's had his problems.
You know what
with
I mean?
Those,
but
who's bringing Rudy Giuliani?
That takes care of it all.
He's probably bringing Chris Christie,
who has ties
with this guy. He's been going to Mexico. He's tight with
them. They mentioned it's the son-in-law, Jared Kushner.
Really?
Giuliani, and then somebody else who are going. That's the four who are meeting with him, I
that
believe.
That poor president. Oh my gosh.
Anyway, James says, Trump supporters, I agree with Alan, about 40% of the population are Trump supporters, even if Hillary wins. And what will these Morlocks, that's a word I'm not familiar with, Morlocks, what does it mean?
It's stupid, ignorant people. They're monsters. Well, yeah, it comes from literature.
Do, and what will we do with them? And that's from Jim.
Jules Verne.
Peter says, as usual, Libby makes several outrageous comments.
Oh, thanks.
It's really wonderful, isn't it, panel, mm-hmm. to know that each day our skin grows a little thicker because we have to. Panel, I suspect that a lot of the 40% who say they will vote for Trump are doing so either because they are anybody but Hillary supporters, voters, or they could have bought into the argument that it's all about who gets appointed to the Supreme Court. Unfortunately, that ignores the enormous damage an erratic, if not unhinged, president can do regardless of the judges they appoint. Alex says, Alan keeps insisting the race is close. WMC isn't CNN. Why pretend it's close for ratings? I'm eating my bile right now, if you can't hear it. Just look at the data comparing how Mitt Romney did with all kinds of groups versus how Donald is doing with the same groups, which is much worse. And this tells me it's going to be a downright blowout. Many Republicans will vote for Hillary in secret or not vote at all. The process is way too long in capital letters. Our democracy is a narcissistic crap show costing billions. Europeans must be disgusted by it. I sure am, says Alex. All right. And Jason says, in order to win by chaos, Trump, with help from the Russians, will show Hillary wins by unrealistic margins. That alone will leave such a dark cloud over Hillary's presidency that it will undermine her win. It will create so much government doubt, a major Republican pillar, and this will rotate in the media until the next election. Under this scenario, Trump looks like a winner even when he's not. And that's from Jason and on. So, Joe?
Okay, we had three winners in primaries yesterday. There were primaries held throughout the country yesterday. The three that we want to focus on, all winners, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Marco Rubio, and John McCain. Any surprises? Not really, right?
No.
Well, first of all, they had the name recognition, right?
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, McCain is a hero in this country. You may not like a lot of what he said. And
even
he does,
if he got caught.
And
right.
He does, and yeah. He does get off the, go off the deep end every once in a while. But he's a very sympathetic guy.
Yes,
he's
also, and especially in Arizona,
yeah,
where
yeah.
they just, you know, mm-hmm. love him.
Yeah, well... They may love him, or he may lose the next.
Or they may lose in the general election.
So the thing to watch there is what he says now about Trump. He needed Trump to beat the Tea Party rival that he had in the primary.
Who was a very staunch Trump supporter.
Staunch Trumpite, right. So what happens now? He says no, he still has to have the Trump supporters vote for him in the general election.
Well, he does.
He does indeed, mm-hmm. but... Might he not win more votes in the general election by being John McCain, who is not a Trumpite at all?
Right.
So
well,
that's interesting.
Who he is.
Yeah, that is a tough one for all of the moderate
yep.
Republicans
yep.
because, you know, you win by 5% or 3% or 2%. And if you, in fact, insult the presidential candidate on your side, however insultable that person may be, you're going to lose votes. There's no question about it. I keep thinking about that assemblyman I keep talking about who when Bill Clinton down in the Hudson Valley, I try not to mention his name, when down in the Hudson Valley, and when Bill Clinton was caught doing the dirty with Monica, he said he's disgusted. And he ran from Bill Clinton, and he lost.
Mm-hmm.
He won subsequently after that. But you can't do that. You just have to stay with your candidate.
The race that Libby and I were talking about that we were interested in was in Florida, where Debbie
Wasserman
mm-hmm. Schultz, I have to think about what order that goes in, won handily despite great criticism of her emails that were revealed just before the Democratic convention and the opposition of Bernie Sanders, who came out in support of her adversary.
I know, but I mean, she won handily.
Yeah, not even close.
Not even close. Right. And so that speaks to the power of incumbency.
And name recognition, right.
But the power
she's
of incumbency.
She's a good congresswoman.
And she does her job. She serves
really
her
good.
Constituents.
And there are many Democrats who will say to you, there isn't something so wrong about her helping Hillary during this thing, and what's so bad about what she did?
That's right. And also, you know, she's Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She represents West Palm Beach area, that whole part of, and so there's a lot of Jews there, and they want to keep a Jew in Congress, and that's part of it too.
Oh, you think that's what it is?
I think that pulls them down a little.
She's actually excellent.
Yes, but even non-Jewish. I get that, Rosemary. But I do think that there are those of us in the Jewish community who would like to see more Jewish elected officials, and so here is one who has risen to a very high pinnacle of power.
You should have worked harder on Bernie then.
Yeah, no.
Well, let me just say that one of my favorite questions when I teach a class, and I hope you will all do the same thing, just to establish this, is to go around the room and ask the students, without any preparation, what percentage of America are Jewish.
Yeah.
And the answer, of course, is 2%.
Right.
You hear outrageous things.
Go to 50%, any college campus
30%.
These days.
My students are all from New York City.
We're everywhere.
Yeah, that's true.
But even in New York City, it ain't, anything 7%. Like a majority. Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. We welcome them. We don't necessarily have to like them, but we do welcome them. roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this.
Support for WMC comes from Mizzentop Day School, Pauling, a co-ed pre-K through 8th grade independent school with small classes and an emphasis on values, academics, and community. Explore, experience, discover, mizzentop.org. Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, for hardy mums, long-blooming perennials and shrubs, ornamental grasses, shade trees, and garden supplies, wardsnursery.com. Lake George Kayak Company, specializing in retail sales on Lake George since 1997 with kayaks, canoes, and stand-up paddleboards. LakeGeorgeKayak.com. Every day is demo day. And Windy Hollow Veterinary Clinic, Montague, Massachusetts. Conventional and integrative veterinary medicine, including acupuncture, comprehensive pet care, and health services since 1998. WindyHollowVet.com.
One of the things that fascinates me about this program is we can say many, many things. Everyone has an opinion. We'll talk about, just key subjects that get to the very core of our humanity. And the things that most people will pick up is something like Morlocks. So just to eradicate about 25% of the letters is that it was,
H.G. Wells
and the Time Machine. I think Jules Verne's name came out at some point, but it is H.G. Wells and
yeah, that was
The Time Machine.
Did anybody write, Alan, you're an idiot because you didn't know this?
It was all just a sort of a correction. So we just got a lot of letters, so I just want to get that out of the way.
All right.
Well, and then you can get to the meaty stuff. Let's move on to some of the other topics that we have to discuss this morning, and let us talk about the president commuting sentences. There we go. If I can actually say the word sentences, I can complete a sentence. President Obama on Tuesday commuted the sentences for 111 inmates, the latest in his push to ease harsh penalties given to often drug offenders, nonviolent drug offenders. Obama has been critical of what he calls the devastating effects of severe sentences handed down during the country's war on drugs. He became the first sitting president to visit a federal prison and spoke there about the importance of second chances. What do we make of the commuting of these sentences?
When it's all over, Barack Obama is going to be evaluated not only by the country as a whole, but by subgroups, including people of color who truly believe that this has been a way of imprisoning black people. I think there's something to that. I know people who smoke pot on the 15th floor of their buildings, and they're never getting caught. you do it on Lexington Avenue, mm-hmm. and you're caught. And you're going to be put in jail for a long time as a result of this. And it is a national disgrace. And I do think that Obama's going to be able to turn around and say, look, this is something, a point I made in my presidency as the first black president, or as the first any president who recognizes how crazy this is.
To your point, Alan, the president said yesterday, kids are now growing up without parents. It perpetuates a cycle of poverty and disorder in their lives. It is disproportionately young men of color that are being arrested at higher rates, charged and convicted at higher rates, and imprisoned for longer sentences.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I like to think of what dinner, you know, he eats dinner with his family every night he can. I like to think of what the kids are asking him and mm-hmm. what Michelle is saying and, you know, keeping him level, although I don't know that he needs to be kept level because I think he's a fairly level guy, but realizing what his total responsibility is to the country in this thing.
I like the way he has discovered in his second term how to use the real powers of the presidency that have not been fully plumbed before. Mm-hmm. He can't get legislation through to change or to commute sentences, to change the sentencing guidelines that result.
Well, prison reform has been a major push
focus.
In prison reform, yes.
But as, of course, it's difficult to get anything through. So he's just put that aside and found another way through these great numbers of commuting of sentences. What are we all looking at?
Nothing. We're all looking at each other.
Oh. Yes.
Of course.
I thought something was happening on TV.
No.
Trump
no,
we just
had
keep,
flown to
we
Mexico
just keep
City
it up there,
something.
You know.
No, but Andy Borowitz from The New Yorker
I
just put out
him.
A piece that said Obama is paying Mexico $5 million to keep Trump. It's not true, folks, but it's pretty funny.
It's satire.
Right.
It's satire.
It's satire. Satire.
It's hard
Borowitz.
Being a satirist these days because it's hard to keep up with what actually is happening. That is one story. The other one I wanted to talk about was, let's go back to Hillary Clinton for a moment. The FBI recovered 30 new. I mean, how long is this going to go
Yawn.
On for?
Fatigue.
Meaning that. Okay, first of all, where are the emails coming from, that where we're finding them?
I don't know. They're opening up drawers in the janitor's office or something. I don't know.
Archives.
30 emails that may be related to the 2012 attack on Benghazi, Libya, are among the thousands of Hillary Clinton emails recovered during the FBI's recently closed investigation into her use of a private server. Government lawyers told U.S. District Court Judge Mehta on Tuesday that an undetermined number of the emails among the 30 were not included in the 55,000 pages previously provided by Clinton. The State Department's lawyer said it would need until the end of September to review the emails and redact potentially classified information before they are released. Mehta questioned why it would take so long to release so few documents and urged that the process be sped up. He ordered the department to report to him in a week with more details about why the review process would take a full month.
I'm sorry, I don't have anything to say on this. I think this subject is long exhausted. I still don't see anything in here. I think the FBI should not be turning over investigative records to Congress so that they can have another Benghazi kangaroo court. If they do, Hillary is going to beat it, just like she did last time, because there's nothing there.
I like to put myself in the place of everybody who does this stuff, including the FBI director, who reminds me of Governor Hughes of New Jersey, who had a nickname. And his nickname was Two Buckets. And the reason they call him Two Buckets is because he had a bucket on each shoulder and he was always walking around trying to keep them level. I suspect there's part of this is his personal reputation, which is involved, in all of
this.
The FBI director. But, you know, there's an old saying, you got to work with what you got. And this, they have very little on Hillary. So they keep coming back to this because it is what they tried Benghazi over and over. Pete Seeger used to talk about repetition. The height of pedagogy is repetition, mm-hmm. whoever he was quoting. That's what they do. I mean, you can expect it to the very end unless they come up with something better.
There needs to be a bombshell for people to pay attention because there's fatigue here. There's Benghazi fatigue. There's email fatigue. Who's tracking? Oh, there's 30 more emails. Oh, there's 10 more emails.
And like, you know, Libby, if there were a bombshell and the FBI didn't come out with it, we got another story to cover.
Right.
And it seems to me if you're going after Hillary, Alan, go look at the foundation because there really is some stuff there that might be
working
out.
I think that's...
Although Bill Clinton went a long way in diffusing that yesterday when he got choked up.
What did he tell us about it?
He was talking about having to sever his ties with the foundation, of which he is very proud. And he teared up about it. It was just one of those human emotions shown.
That makes Bill very different from Hillary.
Exactly. That's why he is the great candidate.
Great point there.
Well,
wow.
She cried in Iowa.
That was in 2008, yes, and yeah, she actually did. Won some votes from that because it was so out of
unexpected. Her foot.
But here is, you know, you don't, if you're conducting a criminal enterprise and it is endangered and you're contemplating leaving it, you don't cry out of, wow, I did a good thing here. Now I have to give it up.
Think of the Carter Foundation. I mean, think of what he has done and if you took that away from him. I mean, that has been his legacy.
Think of George the First Bush. And the Points of Light Foundation. He started that up while he was president.
Right.
I mean,
and never,
come on.
Never gets any
attention.
And
there was never anything. And people are cranking about this, yet Dick Cheney made millions, billions with Halliburton while he was vice president.
But
so
again, Libby, as we have always said here, two wrongs don't make a right. You can't
But there is nothing with the Clinton Foundation.
Well, no, but the what there might be, and I don't know, and Rosemary, I think, alluded to it, is if people give a great deal of money to a foundation which is closely aligned with the president, does that mean that they're going to looking for something back for it?
Exactly.
Well, most people who give money in politics, I've been around for a long, long time.
Sure.
Most people who give money in politics want something back for it.
I don't think there's anything there either, Libby. But as again, if I were a political operative on the Republican side, I'd be looking at the foundation, not at those emails. They have yielded nothing.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, they'll look at the foundation and it will yield nothing. That's the issue here. There was nothing. The foundation has just done good work. It got an A+ from GuideStar and all the other charity monitors. I mean, it's
run. That's not exactly true. They have had some problems. For example, in Haiti, there's been stories in The Nation about it. So have other groups. It's not perfect. So if you want to go,
organization like that can be absolutely perfect in terms of service delivery. But it's done a good job providing.
This is a foundation that raised money based on the power and the entree of the people at top. And that is what makes it vulnerable. There's no getting around that.
But that's how money is raised for that's how things work.
But Libby, this is like arguing that the rules of political parties were not unfair because everybody knew them. That's all true, and I have no problem with it, but it's easy to project it as something the system is rigged.
Absolutely.
That's what's going on here.
It's all smoke and mirrors.
All right. We are out of time.
No.
It is so. But we welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Thank you to Alan and Rosemary and Libby, and we'll be back after this break.